Hello, this is Jesse Liberty, and this is yet another podcast.
Today I have a return visit from Jeremy Lichtness. Jeremy is a three-year Microsoft MVP. He currently works as a principal consultant for Wintellect. He's the author of Building Windows 8 Apps with C# and XAML, and also Designing Silverlight Business Applications. Jeremy, how are you?
I'm doing great.
Well, it's great to have you back.
It's good to be back. I always have fun when I'm on your talk.
Well, we'll see if we can correct that this time. So I'm going to dive right in because I'm going to tell you that InfoWorld this morning at 8:43 a.m. wrote, based on a provocative post on a Chinese language website, the tech blogosphere has erupted, raining down details about Microsoft's next move in the Windows game. The financial press has picked up on it too, with learned discussion on what Windows Blue, as the next version is reportedly called, means for the future of Microsoft, Steve Ballmer, PCs, and the computer industry as a whole. That's a direct quote from InfoWorld. And why don't we start there?
Yeah, that's a great place to start. But Blue's very interesting. I think the rumors have been coming out around Blue for several months now, perhaps even longer than that. What I think's interesting, though, is I don't know if it's the major shift from Windows 7 to Windows 8 that's spurred this. It seems people are really reading a lot into Blue, as if it's going to create as much radical change as Windows 8 did compared to Windows 7. And I don't have any insider information to confirm or deny this, but based on what I've seen, to me, Blue is more about a shift in tempo that we've seen across all divisions at Microsoft. We've seen it with their tempo for releasing TFS updates, for example, Visual Studio updates. And so my understanding is this, you know, bring some of that into alignment, but I'm just not aware. And again, I could be completely wrong of any earth-shattering, groundbreaking changes. I think it's a philosophy of saying, you know what, it works with browsers to have constant releases to stay up with standards. Why don't we start looking at our OS and keep our OS up to date too?
Well, since neither of us has any inside information, we can speculate freely. And let me ask you this. Are people anticipating a significant change, or are they hoping for a significant change because they're disappointed in 8?
Well, I think people are hoping for a significant change. But what's interesting to me is I hear a lot of concern and complaints, but it's tough to get the substance. In other words, there's a camp of people who say this is brilliant, we love it. And then there's a camp of people who will say, you know what, it's terrible, referring to Windows 8. And when I say, well, what's terrible about it? Well, I don't like they took away the start menu, or I don't like this, I don't like this. But there's very few tangibles. Now, there are some very valid concerns, I think. For example, that jarring experience when you switch from desktop mode to the modern UI is what they're calling the Windows 8 experience. So that is there, but I'm not sure how that actually gets addressed if you want to have an operating system that caters to the two different environments and literally can run on my tablet and be this nice mobile touch-friendly operating system that I have, or that I can use as I'm using it right now in a configuration as a development workstation to write code and be productive in that respect. So,
and to what extent do you think that Microsoft is still in a position where they can say, look, suck it up and get used to it?
Oh, that's a good question. I think they're a ways away from that just due to the large number of machines running Windows 7. So we've got XP coming near into life. We still have tons and tons of machines running XP. So there's a clear transition through Windows 7. But the other phenomenon that makes this interesting is what I think created all the interest and the focus on touch in the first place is this concept of bring your own device. And I think there is a phrase out there, the consumerization of IT, right? So everyone's bringing in their own device and IT's forced to stand up and listen. I think that will happen with Windows 8. So I do see that shift coming. The problem is right now the people who are vocal in the technosphere are techies. And techies look at this problem completely differently than consumers. And right now the message is probably confusing and not consistent to consumers. And quite frankly, it's taken a while for some meaningful devices to get out to the market. I think once we have a decent price point and very functional devices is one side, and we start getting consumers excited about it, that's going to force people to stand up and take note. But I also think that companies like Lenovo, with targeting business class customers on touch first laptops that really cater to the Windows 8 environment, I think that's going to make a difference too, because more and more people are going to want those types of machines, bring those machines in. They sit right underneath the corporate security policy, so they're going to fit into the infrastructure seamlessly. And I think we're going to see that shift happen over time, where yes, so Windows 8 will be a force to reckon with because of the fact it has this backwards compatibility to this large install base, and it plugs into the existing security measures that the enterprise has.
And do you think customers, and specifically consumers, are going to get the difference between devices that only run the Windows 8 store applications and devices that are backward compatible and have the desktop?
I don't think the average consumer will, and they shouldn't have to. So, I mean, some of the people I've talked to have the machines that run both. They understand, they get used to that switch between the desktop, but there's no one who's not a technical person that I've talked to who really has a solid understanding of what Windows RT versus Windows 8 is. And I think Windows RT is a great operating system, but unless it can build parity and actually cater to those desktop style applications, I'm not sure if it's going to continue to be relevant. I mean, part of the appeal of it was, of course, running on these ultra thin ARM devices that have no fan. They're whisper quiet. I have an Asus VivoTab RT and I love it. I mean, the thing is thin, it never gets hot, and it works great. It doesn't do everything I want it to do because of the limitations, but it does the things I want a lightweight tablet to do. However, moving forward now with the Intel Atom and the advances that they're creating with that, I think it's going to make that RT obsolete, because we'll have that option for a lightweight, you know, low power device that can run the older software.
So Atom devices will run Windows 8 in full.
Right, along with the Windows 7 software. So backwards compatibility is built into that.
And is there anybody on the planet who can get Windows RT, WinRT, and Windows 8 differentiated?
A few techies, I think, are about it, yeah.
So what else are you hearing about Blue? Anything promising?
You know, the only things I'm really hearing is that it's a new cadence, and that obviously there are, you know, certain issues. People would like to see the XAML stack evolve on Windows 8. People would like to see a lot of things happen. So I think it's an opportunity for that. I like the idea of a faster cadence. I think it gets things out more quickly, as long as they do something that they prove they can do with Silverlight. And I hate to bring up an old dead technology, but it used to be my playground, so I love making that comparison. But they had a pretty fast rhythm of releases for major versions with Silverlight, and they got the backwards compatibility story down really well after version 3. So 3 to 4 to 5 was a really solid story, and if they can do that with the operating system, I think we're going to see some really exciting opportunities.
Yes, Silverlight burned bright, and it burned fast.
It did.
Now, let's take a breath and try to step back 100 feet and talk about the state of Windows 8 itself. What do you like about it? What do you dislike about it? Where would you like to see changes and improvement?
So I like it a lot, and I'm very biased because I've been using it for a good deal of time. I've gotten used to it. Some of the challenges I think people have said they have with Windows 8, I don't entirely agree with. I think there's some kind of, I move my cheese and I have to do things differently. But once you get used to doing things differently, I've found that it's quicker, more effective than the way I used to work. So I think it was a unique approach to both create a touch-first platform that can easily run touch and nothing else on a tablet form factor while still maintaining the desktop fallback. Now, having said that, you know, feature-wise, I like what's going on with Windows 8. I heard a lot of concerns about, for example, I just brought up the issue with the XAML stack. However, I think we need to temper that and balance it with the purpose of the Windows 8 apps, the Windows Store apps. These run in a pretty tight security container. And so there are certain things you might not want to be able to do from an extensibility perspective. But at the same time, if you're trying to build an application that targets that form factor and you're trying to do things like, say, interface with legacy USB devices or even, heaven forbid, COM ports or things like that, there should be enough flexibility in the platform to cater to that. So I think there's opportunity there. I think the development experience for it has come full on. They took the best features of Silverlight, of Blend, of WPF, of the whole stack as it evolved, and put that together in the package that we have to develop for Windows 8. So from that perspective, I think it's an incredible package. I can do a lot with a little code. When I get to an edge case, though, it's a lot more restrictive, so that's difficult. So we have to see how Microsoft will either open up and allow more avenues for customization or build in more core features that address that. So that's interesting. I think, honestly, the biggest challenge I have right now with the whole Windows 8 model is the deployment model. And that's not a usage, so I might be getting off track a little bit, but I think the story for deploying to the enterprise and the story for setting up enterprise stores, etc., right now I don't think it's a good story. It's an expensive story, and it's going to create friction, and I think something has to be done about that.
Well, tell me a little bit about what the story is for enterprise applications, because to my knowledge, the story was, well, we'll have one soon.
Right. So there are slowly bits and pieces trickling out around what it takes to, for example, be able to sideload a application onto a device, for what it takes to stand up your own sort of version or extension to the Windows Store. And I don't want to get into a lot of the details. It's not my core area of expertise, but from just talking to other people, there's subscription-based models for monitoring and deploying the packages. But what it comes down to is there's a lot of licensing involved. There's licensing based on what the target device is, and there's licensing based on how you want to sideload and how you want to route your software into those target machines. And when you add up all the features and functionality that a typical enterprise would want to have control, it becomes quite expensive. And I think this is one of those things that, just like what happened with cloud services, right, with Azure, where some of the initial models were just not acceptable to businesses, and they were modified and changed and updated. And the two key issues, right, were cost, but then also calculating cost. Like, how do I even estimate what I'm going to be charged? I see some of that creeping up in the Windows 8 for the enterprise story. But if history serves as any indicator, Microsoft has always been fast and responsive to that. So I do anticipate changes coming down, and maybe those changes will be a part of what Blue brings to us, but only time will tell for that.
Okay, you mentioned modifications to XAML a couple times, and I want to come back to that. But when you were talking about the operating system as a whole, what occurred to me is I really like Windows 8, and I love developing for Windows 8. But when I look at where I actually spend my time, first of all, 95% of it is at the desktop, and part of that's because I'm more developer than a consumer. But the other piece is that when I'm in the Windows 8 store applications, I'm almost universally in the what I think of as the iPad applications, that is, the entertainment or infotainment applications of Netflix or Kindle or possibly quickly checking the weather. But I don't find myself using extensively Windows Store applications as primary applications for my computer. Do you?
No, I don't. Now, I do find myself using them in combination. For example, right now I'm on Skype, and I'm using the Windows 8 version of Skype, and I have it in a snap view. So I still have my desktop, my two external monitors, and then a small window for Skype that I can, you know, turn on and off and interact with. So I see myself using it that way. But you are correct. For heavy productivity, if I have to run SQL Server and multiple web servers and be in Visual Studio, or even, for example, when I'm authoring and I'm writing. You know, I've got Word pulled up, I've got Excel pulled up, so I'm using all those tools in the desktop mode. However, I will say once my workday wraps up, when I'm walking in the other room and I want to sit down, maybe play some games, watch some movies, when I'm looking at my RSS feeds, when I'm queuing up my tweets for Twitter, and to an extent even preparing materials for a blog post, I do all of that with Windows 8 apps. Now, I don't actually write the blog posts in Windows 8, but I do a lot of that prep work. For example, I'll go through news feeds and links and you know, tag them and star them and prep them. But that is a very good, I guess, way of showing the contrast between the two, that there's this casual, mobile, entertainment-related surfing that's in that Windows 8 version, and then there's the more intensive hands to keyboard, pounding through code, pounding through articles that happens on the desktop side.
You mentioned, and I want to bring you back to it, XAML and changes to XAML. Were there specific changes that you had in mind?
So it's quite interesting, actually, that you asked me that, because when the development kits first came out, the first thing I did, which I think every developer did, was I took what I have now and what's down the road approach, and I said, look at all these features I have in Silverlight 5. This isn't there, this isn't there, this isn't there in Windows 8. And suddenly it looked like a very limited stack taking that approach. Now that I've spent the past year and a half, whatever it's been, writing the apps, I'm finding most of the stack that I need is there. There are some things that may not come out of the box that we're used to in Silverlight, such as behaviors and triggers, but those are also things that can be built. So it would be nice if they were first class and brought out. But even in Silverlight, I think it's easy to forget that a lot of the ability to create attached behaviors and everything was provided by a library that came out of Expression Blend. It wasn't even a core part of Silverlight. So to answer that, off the top of my head, I actually couldn't point to a very specific thing that's missing from XAML. Some people say markup extensions, but I've been using most of the frameworks that ship with it, so I haven't had that need. A lot of the use I had for customizing markup extensions was when I used the Managed Extensibility Framework. The reason we used that was for dynamic module loading. That really doesn't make sense in the Windows 8 environment. You have these small, self-contained applications that operate off of data. In fact, I'd even go so far as to say there's some controls that are so much more advanced than what we had to work with, like the controls that end with view, the grid view, the list view that handle group data that actually add a lot of flexibility. The semantic zoom, for example, it's a great control that we didn't have before. So I think it's a good balance. I'm sure there's some small nuances that will come up here and there, but as I get more into XAML, I still hear the complaints that it's not with parity with what, you know, Silverlight 5 was or with what WPF was, but I'm not sure if those advanced features make sense in the sandbox that, if you will, that Windows 8 is.
Your latest book is Building Windows 8 Apps with C# and XAML, and I've read a good chunk of this book, and it's an extraordinary book. Can you talk a little bit about who your target audience was and what you were hoping to cover?
Sure. So, and initially there's some history, because I'm working on a follow-on to that book right now, and I don't have a lot of details, but it's useful to know the history. The initial plan was to have that huge reference book that sort of covered front to back the OS, but it was evident early on when we got our hands on the developer preview and then consumer preview that this thing was changing fast and it would take some time to stabilize. And we also saw the aggressive deadline that Microsoft was pushing towards and said, hey, they're actually going to hit this date. So what we decided early on was, let's make a resource so that anyone day one when this thing is released and is available to the public can start building applications. So target audience for me was mainly those developers who already have some familiarity with developing C#, preferably familiarity with the XAML stack, and wanted to know what does it take to get from what I'm doing now to getting a Windows app in the store, a Windows Store app completed? So that was really the target. It said, let me take this, do an end-to-end approach and hit all of the key items that are unique and different for Windows 8 so that a WPF developer, a Silverlight developer, or someone who's used to those technologies can say, okay, hey, what's different? What do I need to know about this new environment? How does touch work? How does input work? What are the new controls? What are the nuances of updating tiles? How do I deploy this thing to the store? So the goal is this end-to-end story that says I can get an app in the store and do everything I need to basically build it and put it out there.
And your new book, what's the focus of that?
So the new book is that deep dive. So the arrangement I had with the publisher was, let's do this book so that people can get things in the store, but then let's follow up with the deeper dive. And to give you just an idea of scope, and obviously subject to editing and everything else, I'm about 3 chapters into writing it, already about 150 pages, and we're targeting about 20 chapters for the book. So it's focused on the Windows runtime. And what I'm doing is making sure that there's no stone left unturned. In other words, hitting the full surface area of the API. And it's a by example book. So I want to give you an example of encrypting a file. I want to give you an example of logging onto a social network, of, you know, reading a Twitter stream of streaming to a Play-2 device. So if it's in the Windows runtime, I want to reference that and have a story and an example around it in this book.
That will be a much needed book, because most of us are writing books that cover a good chunk of Windows 8. And, you know, each of us finds a niche for, well, I particularly cover this that others didn't. But I don't know of another book out there that's trying to be as comprehensive as what you're describing. Do you have any guess as to when we'll see your book?
It'll be early next year. So this was a book that I wanted to do two things: give myself time to do everything I need to do, get the examples fleshed out, get the detail in there. But I also want to make sure that as this Windows Blue comes out, that we have time to adapt and update the material, so it'll be comprehensive and inclusive of that as well.
And what about Sterling Database, your love child from Silverlight? What's happening with that?
That is a very exciting story. So a lot of people have used the Sterling Database. It's had thousands of downloads, been integrated in products, has had some hiccups. So this is a database designed to provide easy access to local queryable storage. And the philosophy was low footprint. You shouldn't have to map your objects to relational database tables. You should be able to just take a class and without tagging it or modifying it or doing anything to it, save it and retrieve it. And then you should be able to on the fly say, hey, this property on this class is important to me, so I want to be able to query against it and use Link and have high-speed queries. So that was the goal. One of the snags that we hit, there was a slight issue with the way it stored property lists that was fine in Silverlight, was fine on the desktop, was fine in, you know, the WPF desktop versions, was fine in the earlier versions of Windows Phone. But with Windows Phone 8, actually broke the way it retrieved properties. It wasn't an insurmountable issue, but it was there. And, you know, this kind of sat out there for a while because we had so much going on and I was a one-person team. Fortunately, I had someone from the community, Peter Morleon. I'm hoping I'm pronouncing his last name correctly, but he came out and offered to jump in, and he's revved it to version 1.6.2 is the latest version, and addresses all of those issues so that the users can come in, and it provides this ability to adapt. So if I have a class that changes, I can provide an adapter and update the changes. So really a lot of the bigger issues people were complaining about were addressed. But more importantly, the biggest request I've received over the past several years for Sterling is it going to be available for Windows 8? Will you bring it to the Windows runtime? And I can say today that the answer is yes. And within the next week or so, we will be releasing a version of Sterling that runs on Windows Phone 8 and WinRT. So it's through the managed code base. So it's not your WinRT component that you can call from JavaScript. It's meant for managed Windows Store apps. but it will be available to pull in as a library for Windows Store apps that are written with VB.NET or C#.
Well, first let me congratulate you, and then let me push you a little bit and ask, why would a developer choose to use that rather than one of the alternatives, such as SQLite, or not using a SQL-based system at all?
Right. So there are slowly emerging alternatives, and those are interesting alternatives. SQLite, I believe, still requires a little bit of finagling. You can get it working, and it is a relational database. And I will say, if you need to create relational lookups across millions of rows of records, use SQLite. It is fabulous at doing that and handling those relationships. You have to map it, right? So I need to map from my model to that relational database, but it's great at doing that, and that's not Sterling's sweet spot. What Sterling does is it allows you to use object graphs as they are. So if I have an object that contains an object that contains an object, it basically, you can think of it as an advanced serialization engine. So it's a very low barrier to entry. I don't have to map it to tables. I don't have to configure a separate set of tables. If I have a class, I just tell Sterling, hey, here's my class, and here's the property that's interesting as a key, and it's done. And it saves it, and it serializes it. Now, what it's really good at doing is walking those object graphs and saving smaller sets of data. Again, it's not intended to be a million row database, but it is intended to scale to thousands of objects if you have it. So it's ideal for things like local caching of data, for things like saving state for view models. So there's a built-in state engine in the Windows 8 templates, but it has some limitations. You have to have known data types, etc. This will just work and just save it out as needed without very much overhead. So it reduces the ceremony. But what's more interesting about it, I think, is that in the story of building apps for Windows 8, for Windows Phone 8, and possibly even for Silverlight or WPF, believe it or not, people are still doing that, this will provide a consistent API to do that. So as you have your shared libraries, you'll also have a shared modality for saving that data. And the model that Sterling works on is a driver-based model. So the persistence is separated from the main engine. What that means is, for example, on Silverlight, you could write to isolated storage, or if you were running under elevated trust, you could write directly to the file system. Well, what that means for Windows 8 apps and for Windows Phone 8 apps, etc., is number one, we have the opportunity to create drivers that are optimized, because right now isolated storage has to do a quota check every time you save a file. That's one of the drawbacks of Sterling that slows it down when you're pulling. The keys are stored in memory, so those are fast, but when you're pulling a lot of full objects, it can be slow. Well, we have the opportunity to write a single file driver to speed that up. So that'll be one improvement that's in the works. The other is using the same API, same model, and all I'm doing is just switching my driver. I can have cloud-based storage. So I can drop in a cloud driver, and by the way, that's in the works too, is to have a blob storage driver so that I can code this locally if I want to, but literally just by swapping out a driver, I'll be able to save up to the cloud.
What's the learning curve at this point for becoming proficient?
For Sterling, I would say it's a very light barrier to entry. Learning curve is so tough, especially when you've been working on it so long like I have. So, you know, I'm going to tell you, oh, you pick it up just like that. But people I've worked with who have used it, typically they pick up persisting and querying right away. They see the example, they run through. Where they may run into issues is just optimization edge cases. I want to optimize. I have a complex, I'll show you a real world example. I'm saving geo-coordinates, and Sterling has a single index or a double index. Those are the two built-in indexes, but I actually want to index based on all three coordinates, lat, long, and, you know, I don't know, altitude or whatever that might be. So how do I do that? You can actually do that. Just create a class that contains those properties, and that class can be the key, etc. But so some of those more complicated cases, I think, you know, have a little bit higher learning curve. But the way it's designed to actually get up and running, you literally describe the class, and then you describe the key for the class using a Lambda expression. You're off to the races.
Great. We will put a link to Sterling and how folks can get that, as well as to your existing books. We can't put a link to your new book yet. But we should definitely get some of those links onto the show page so that folks can find this material.
Absolutely.
How are you spending your days these days? What are you focused on?
So it's quite interesting. There's a mix. I think, like many developers, I have a large portion of my day spent completely outside of the Windows 8-centric world and in the web world. There's a lot of HTML5 development, and I'm definitely not immune to that. And I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek. I've always been an enterprise web developer. So with Windows 8, it's interesting because that becomes more of a native client to web-based services. So there's a lot of native support. So in addition to building Windows 8, we have active Windows 8 projects. I'm working very heavily on enterprise applications that are heavy client-based. So that's using JavaScript and single page applications. And I feel like, you know, I could repeat a bunch of buzzwords and we're probably using those, but I have a very interesting project I'm working on right now that I think is relevant because it ties directly back to why I love developing Windows 8 apps and Silverlight apps and WPF apps. This is a web project that we're using the combination of TypeScript and Angular as a framework for. And what TypeScript does for us is without violating the sacred features of JavaScript, it allows you to make it a little bit easier. So in other words, some JavaScript purists say, learn the language. It's different from object-oriented. Don't take that away. And what I like about TypeScript, it's not an attempt to fix JavaScript like it's broken, but it does provide strong typing and compile time checking that makes it easier to scale to a large team. So I have projects where I might have 10 developers who are all coding together. And one of the nice things about Silverlight and the XAML stack was that you had this nice separation of design and code and strong typing. And it made it easier for people to develop together. JavaScript has a lot fewer checks. So TypeScript sits on top of JavaScript, allows us to have that typing. So that's good. Angular provides a declarative way to bind data, and it provides sort of that design developer workflow that we love so much with XAML and C#. So if you think of Angular as sort of XAML for the web, you wouldn't be too far off. And what we found is we shifted from using some other frameworks that did data binding in MVVM. This particular framework, because it's just far more declarative in nature, is definitely reducing development time. In other words, we can get a page stood up far more quickly, and we have less issue with dependencies and people bumping into each other because we have well-structured, well-defined modules. So it's pretty exciting to see that unfold.
I have a couple ignorant questions about Angular. You're saying that that is declarative binding. So does that stand in replacement to, say, Knockout.js?
It does, but it does it in a subtly different way. And the easiest way to describe that for Knockout, I have a little bit more ceremony. So in other words, if I want to create a view model, for example, I'll spin up and declare a view model. I'll extend an object that Knockout exposes, and then I'll say, hey, this property is observable. Mm-hmm. So it knows that if the property changes, it has to make updates. Angular does it a little less obtrusively. If I get a payload back from a web API call, so I have some JSON data, that just magically becomes my view model. I don't have to do anything. I can bind it directly to data, and Angular does all of the work of turning it into something that's observable. It also provides things called directives, which basically the nice thing about XAML is that you could create your own controls, your own XAML objects. It was basically a rich way of instantiating an object graph. So if I had a rectangle, instead of having to say, hey, draw this corner, that corner, whatever, I could just drop in a rectangle tag, and that would instantiate the rectangle object, and then I give it properties. So what Angular does is it allows me to create new HTML tags, and those tags can encapsulate functionality and behavior. So if I have this grid control that I'm using, and every time I use that grid control, which we use Kendo UI, by the way, we love it. And there's a Kendo UI grid control, but there are certain things you need to set up every time you use a Kendo grid control. So why even make the developer have to do that? So we've created a directive in Angular that is a you know, basically a Kendo grid control tag that we can drop in. And if you drop it in by itself, it has all the default configuration, but then you can add a few attributes to extend it. So it just makes it really easy for a developer to do file new and stand up a web page, because they're no longer saying, okay, what is the standard way that we do a multi-selection box? They just drop in the tag, multi-selection box, here's your data source, and they're done.
That sounds extremely powerful, and would be great if they had Angular for Windows 8 so that you could do declarative binding for the HTML5 JavaScript guys.
You know, that's actually an interesting thought, because I would imagine it would be possible to pull that in. I'd have to look into it, but it's amazing how much support the WinJS in Windows Store apps has for just standard JavaScript, and you'd be amazed at some of the libraries people have pulled in. I'll tell you what, even from C-sharp based app, I'm writing a portion of the new book right now that deals with the web view control, and that's where you can pull in HTML content. You'd be amazed at how much you can do as far as JavaScript scripting within that content, and even have bidirectional communication between your app and the web page and so forth. So it's pretty powerful.
All right, so that brings me to my $64,000 question of the day, which is, am I falling behind if I'm proficient in XAML and C#, but I'm not paying attention to JavaScript and HTML5? Do I need to be in both camps?
I think HTML5 is very important to be aware of. I don't think XAML's going anywhere anytime soon, so it depends on your niche. For example, Silverlight was a very small niche. As successful as it was and as bright as it burned, it was still a niche. People were still doing web apps. There were still organizations who just wouldn't introduce Silverlight, but there was enough there to get work. I would say for a consultant right now, if they want to focus on the XAML stack and that's their specialty and they're good at it, I think they can get away with it. I think you can find XAML-based projects, but, and again, my firm is definitely not the temperature gauge for the whole country and all the companies, whatever. But we do get a large cross-section of projects. And I feel like the trends that I see with the size of the companies we work with are probably trends people are going to see all over. And to answer your question directly, HTML5 is key. I'm seeing more and more and more projects coming across the desk that say, you know, we want an HTML5 solution. I think people are getting wiser to the fact that HTML5 does not deliver on the promise that you just write it once and it runs everywhere perfectly. They're understanding there's challenges, so now they're looking to people who have the expertise in building large systems and understanding those nuances. So Windows 8 is going to gain traction. We're still going to have those powerful, rich desktop applications. We get new WPF work. It's still out there. People still like that modality. But by and large, the majority of work I'm seeing is related to HTML5 and actually with a very heavy client-side component. Now that there's this support across all the browser stacks for things like scalable vector graphics, SVG, people are realizing they can do a lot more rich interactive applications just on the web, and they want to move that way because it's so much easier than having to install an application or install a framework and say you need this, this, and this. It's like, hey, you've got a web browser, point it here, you're off to the races, you're good to go.
We're going to need to have you come back and talk in detail about HTML5 and JavaScript and help me differentiate between what are the pieces of each and where the sweet spot is on learning all of that. But this was tremendous today. This was just great.
Absolutely. I'd be excited to talk about it. And you hit the nail on the head, right? There are so many pieces to it that you can focus on. HTML5 is almost, I'd say, an overworn term, because it's really what part of HTML5 are you talking about? So I'd be happy to do that. And I really enjoyed this, like I always do. Some great questions that you had and some great topics. I think this is one of the most exciting years in development because there's so much change coming. Some people hate that. They're like, oh my gosh, too much change. Just I got used to the old stack and why can't you keep things the same? But I think it's a lot of positive change, a lot of exciting technologies, and I'm looking forward to seeing what 2014 looks like.